Yeah, so the system I'm going to tell you about is of a type considered by Michael just now. It's a system which has sort of nothing interesting happening in the bulk, but has chiral edge states. So these edge states are protected just because they're chiral. But the interesting thing is actually that what we'll find is that if you consider, normally you think of you add symmetry and you get some you know special system. Here we're going to show that if you take away all the symmetry, then symmetry reemerges in the infrared, that is in the deep, long wavelength limit. Okay. So we call this asymmetry protected emergent EA symmetry because it only emerges when you have no symmetry, including no translation invariance. Okay, and the talk is summarized by these three numerological equations. So it's also emergent numerology. And let me just say from Harvard and acknowledge that funded by the Simons Foundation. Okay, my collaborators here are Jay and Senthil. And let me just make a comment. This subject has a tortured history for some reason. People knew about this E8 theory in high energy physics for a long time, but they had a slightly different perspective. I mean, in condensed matter, we're really interested in, I have some bulk two-dimensional system, and on its edge is this edge CFT, which is chiral and which has this E8 symmetry. So a lot of very useful references, the Big Yellow Book. As far as I know, it first appeared in this paper by Gross talking about heterotic string theory. I don't know, maybe it appeared before that. Of course, Witten's papers are very useful. There's a comment in Kataev's paper at the very end, maybe like one sentence. So this is often called the Kataev E8 state, but I don't think that's really, a lot of people have independently discovered this state, so. And then we're gonna use an argument of due to Kane and Fisher to treat the disorder later on. Okay, and then, so this is some kind of long history here. Okay, but let me just first tell you the plan. So I'm gonna give you some motivation, slightly more general, only, well, actually very more general, but some motivation. Then I'm gonna set up the rules of the game. I'm gonna give a bunch of constructions of this E8 state and tell you how to treat disorder and show you that when you include disorder, some emergent symmetry appears. Okay, this is the triple S paper to appear at some point in the near future. So my overarching picture, what I'm interested in quantum matter is this interplay between entanglement and normalization. So here you have some kind of coarse grained transformation and you combine it with singlets. And you wanna know, okay, how do these two very fundamental things interact with each other? Okay, and there's this interesting experimental fact which really motivates me, which is that there are systems of interacting qubits which are secretly theories of quantum gravity. Okay, so they have in some sense, so the qubits are the red, they live on the surface, and then this blue is some emergent space, in which case there are propagating gravitational fields in this space. So this is normally thought of as a theoretical tool, but it's really just some amazing experimental fact about the technology is supersymmetry and various other things enable these very smart people to prove that this is true, although I would say we don't understand why it's true. And so, in fact, I claim that it's actually intimately related to the structure of entanglement and renormalization. So here's just a cartoon. Again, this is just some pictorial motivation. You can build, you know, and this makes contact with all these tensor network descriptions. So deep questions about can you simulate classically quantum systems? What does entanglement look like in many body systems? So, okay, there's some big story here. I just want to say, you know, you can make other kind of statements. You can try to obtain features of this holographic story from the tensor network, for example, in this so-called large and strong coupling limit, so many colors of gauge theory and strong interactions, certain special features emerge. For example, you have this, it's called a sparse spectrum of operator dimension. So there are very few scaling fields with low dimension. And actually very recently we had a paper with some collaborators in UBC where we looked at some dynamics and saw that some long time scales emerge. Okay, so I don't expect you to understand anything I'm saying. Just it's just some vague, very different motivation that we should really think about and care about the interplay between entanglement and normalization. Okay, and if you want to ask about any of these things, I would really like to talk about them. So I was at this conference about Hamiltonian complexity and everyone kept showing theorems, so I wanted to show a theorem. So here's my theorem. It's a physics theorem. So I claim based on the previous picture that entanglement normalization works up here, and then Giffre just did it down here numerically. Okay, and so by this intermediate value theorem applied to the craziness axis, it must be the case that it works everywhere. Actually, the state I'm going to think about is going to be sort of down here, a little farther down on the craziness axis. Okay, so what are we going to really do? So my overarching goal is to understand better the way that entanglement and normalization talk to each other in quantum matter. And of course, there are many, many kinds of entanglement. There's short-range entanglement, long-range entanglements, with edge states, without edge states, with symmetry, without symmetry. Okay, there's a laundry list of things. So maybe we can learn something interesting or see some interesting phenomenon by studying some simple examples of long-range entangled states. Okay, so you can ask various questions. What is the simplest long-range entangled state? What does this entanglement look like? What's the low-energy physics? And what I'm going to talk about is this thing called the E8 state. And I'm going to tell you what this is in just a second. Okay, so let me tell you the rules of the game that we're going to play by. So rule one is the system is a system of bosons. So the microscopic Hilbert space is a tensor product of local bosonic spaces, like living on a lattice, let's say. Okay, the Hamiltonian is local in two dimensions, so I'm thinking about spatially two dimensions. At first, I'm going to say there's no symmetry in the system besides translation variance. Okay, so just think about a quantum spin model with magnetic fields and all kinds of Zeeman terms. There's just no conserved symmetry. Time reversal is broken, everything is broken. I'm going to also require there to be a bulk gap. And finally, I'm going to require that the bulk be sort of boring in some sense, that it has no anionic excitations, no topological degeneracy. Okay. So I'm interested in states that satisfy these properties. Okay, so here's one state that satisfies this property. It's like a mean field superfluid state or a mod insulating state. It's just a tensor product of states on each of the sites, right? And these things are the same when I don't have any symmetry, right? I can smoothly go from a mod insulator to a superfluid if I have a large external superfluid sitting there that I can exchange particles with. Okay, but this state is a product state. It's not entangled, so I can't learn anything about the interplay between entanglement and normalization by studying this state. So what's the simplest long-range entangled state? Well, I find this surprising. I think many people find it surprising. You might think that if there's no bulk anions, no fractionalization, no symmetry, and a gap, can you have anything at all, right? Now, you might be encouraged that if you have fermions instead of bosons, there is something. There's integer quantum Hall, right? This system has this chiral edge state, has thermal Hall conductance. It can't be gapped out, right? But what about for bosons? Can there be anything? And it turns out that at least in two dimensions, there is a state. And in fact, you can make many more states by stacking these things up together. And this state, which is called the E8 state, has bulk gap, no anions, etc., but it has chiral edge states. So its thermal Hall conductance is 8 in some appropriate units. Okay. This 8 will come up here again and again. Okay, so let me just briefly sort of review what Michael told you. Why are chiral edge states protected? If they were really one-dimensional things, you could violate thermodynamics. You could just pump heat from a cold body to a hot body along this one-way pipe. But what has to happen is that in two dimensions, let's say, you have to always have the other side somewhere, which couples your hot and cold reservoirs, right? And so what this picture tells you is that I can't do anything local up here to kill this edge state, because if I could, I'd be back to the effectively one-dimensional picture where I'm pumping charge. Well, let's say I want to kill this one. So I'm pumping energy from a cold body to a hot body, right? So somehow chiral edge states are, as Michael said, just because of energy conservation or thermodynamics or whatever, they're very robust objects. So you can't get rid of them. You have to really change the big purple blob in order to remove the edge. Okay. So let me give you kind of first look at this theory that we're going to think about. We're going to use what's called the K-matrix formulation. So Michael already talked about this. You can normally think of like these, you introduce some gauge fields, and these gauge fields are dual to currents, to these conserved currents. But I'm going to allow myself to break all the symmetries. So I don't really have any conserved currents. I can add terms that create these charges. And I think the real virtue of this thing is that there's this nice edge description. And you might think it's kind of reasonable because Chern-Simons theory is associated with chiral edge states. So I should consider some kind of generalized Chern-Simons theory to describe a system of bosons with chiral edge states. Okay, so I'm not going to really say anything more about this. It's just some framework. And there are requirements on this matrix K. It's symmetric, it has to be even, and its determinant has to be 1. And this last requirement is basically the statement that it doesn't have any topological anions or fractional statistics. I'm just using it as a device. So I'm taking this action and then add other terms, add Higgs terms or whatever you want.
So its meaning is that the flux is a conserved current. least the current.
I mean, so this theory has this conservation, but then I can add other terms to break that. Okay. But let me just go to the edge, which is what I really care about. So this is the famous E8 edge theory. So these phis are just bosons that appear as sort of like the edge modes of these gauge fields I introduced before. And like I said, you can break all the symmetries you want in the bulk, that's fine. And the bulk will be deformed. But as I just argued, you can never get rid of these chiral edge states by some local deformations. So this has the same form that Michael was talking about. This thing is called the K matrix. This is the velocity matrix. So there's sort of these bosonic fields. And this K really tells you the commutation relations, and V is like some energy. Okay. And this K matrix here, this is the E8, so-called E8 K matrix. And the reason why this matrix is special is because if you make these requirements on K, that it's symmetric, even, and has determinant 1, then there are not so many solutions. For example, 2 is not a solution, right? Because determinant of 2 is 2. And 2 times 2 is not a solution, right? So you need to, you know, have some minus 1s, but it has to be even. You know, there's some games you can play. So it turns out this is a very special matrix.
So is this called E8 because it's the Cartan matrix?
Yes, so this is the Cartan matrix of E8, which I'll briefly mention in a second. And you can see, because I have to have 8 of them, that's where this kappa xy of 8.
Brian, you can say it's positive.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's very easy.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, that's right. It's positive. I was talking about chiral, so it's positive definite.
Is this the only solution?
Yes.
For 8, yeah, it's the only solution. So there are if you do 16 or 24 and so on, and there are more. Yeah, so I'm always chiral. Everything is going in the same direction. So everything has to be these 2s here. All positive. So what does this have to do with E8? Well, there's this, okay, so what is E8, right? I just used this word so far. So it's a Lie group. It's a big continuous group. And mostly we're gonna think about the Lie algebra. Okay, so this Lie algebra has 248 generators. So you should think of it as sort of like SU2, but with 245 more J's. Okay. And so we can make a correspondence which is pretty precise. So there are 8. So here again is 8 appearing. So-called Cartan generators, right? Which you think of as like JZ. So these are generators that commute amongst themselves. So you can simultaneously diagonalize all these generators. And then the remaining 248 generators can be formed into what are called generalized raising and lowering operators. So they're sort of like J plus and minus. And you have this basic rule for SU2 that JZ commutator with J plus minus is plus minus J plus minus. So we want to generalize this rule, or at least that's what, you know, Lie and company did 100 years ago. So here's the way to generalize it, right? You have these Cartan generators, 8 of them, these HAs, and they all commute, right? So I can simultaneously diagonalize them. And then I have these generalized raising and lowering operators. And their commutation relation with HAs is that when you commute HA with E alpha, you get some number, which is related to this label here, times E alpha, right? So it generalizes this relationship here. Okay, and there are many, many rules and regulations that these things have to obey and properties, but I'm not gonna tell you any of that just because I don't understand it that well myself, so I can't really explain it to you. And then this K matrix then becomes, again, as was mentioned, it's called the Cartan matrix. And in this case, you can really think of it as it's sort of a matrix of inner products of these so-called root vectors. So these alphas are called roots. And if you take what are called the simple roots, so some sort of like simple basis set, then you take the inner products of all these guys, and that's the K matrix. So the K matrix is some special matrix, which is just really inner product of basis vectors in some lattice. Okay. So here's the... Again, the K-matrix theory, I can write down the equation of motion for that theory. That equation of motion has this form. It's KAB dt dx phi equals VAB. Oh, sorry, there should be some Ds here, which I left off, sorry. And this theory, if I want to have everybody have the same velocity, requires that the matrix V, the velocity matrix, actually be proportional to the K-matrix. So this is a very unusual feature. But if I really want to have this symmetry, then I have to make this definition. But this is non-generic. I want to emphasize this is very non-generic. But if I did make this identification, then I can obtain what's called the current algebra. So in other words, I have in this theory representations of all these operators that I, these generators that I mentioned before, the HAs and the E alphas. And here's what they look like. You take these bosons, 8 of them, you take the derivative with respect to x, and that's the Cartan generators. And then you can form what are called vertex operators, right? So you take these phi a's and you multiply them by integers, and you sum over all the a index. And these are some scaling operators also. And there are 8 of these, and you can check that they have dimension 1 because phi is dimensionless and derivative has dimension 1. The dimension of these is there's a simple formula, but you can check that there are 240 choices of n which have dimension 1. Okay. So this is just something, you know, using this matrix K that I showed you before. This controls scaling dimensions in a certain way. You can check that there are 240 of these which have dimension 1. Okay. And these 240 E alphas plus the 8 HAs together combine to form the so-called current algebra of E8. So it's just like the currents that generate this symmetry in this theory. Okay, and I can play other games. I just want to say, you know, I should mention, you know, this is just some mathematical structure which was known in string theory for a long time and in many other places. But here we're sort of, you know, really trying to go through it again, in principle, being more careful about the condensed matter subtleties. Right? And in particular, we're going to worry a lot about this condition here. So I can also compute the partition function. So suppose I take the E8 state and put it on a disk, so it has a boundary here, then I have this chiral edge states on the boundary. And I can compute the partition function of the E8 theory, which lives on this disk, very simply. This is a free boson theory. Anybody can do this. And this Q to the minus 1/3 is just a certain choice for the ground state energy. This is not really universal. I just chose this value because it leads to some nice properties. So this you should think of as the ground state. And then this 248 Q, where Q is equal to this, this is like the Boltzmann weight of a single mode. This 248 Q is the same as 240 plus 8, right? It's just these 248 current algebra states generated by these operators. So this is what the partition function looks like in some normalization. Now I want to really emphasize this point. Okay, this is where condensed matter differs from heterotic string theory. Well, one place. This VAB is not generally equal to V times KAB. Okay. And if it's not equal, then you don't have conformal symmetry, you don't have V8 symmetry. Everybody has different velocities, nobody's moving with the same speed, you don't have any kind of nice structure. You still have the thermal Hall effect, of course. But, you know, all the nice properties of this E8 CFT are kind of lost. And the question we want to ask is, can we do better? And the answer actually is yes, as I'll show you. And the intuition is, I think, relatively straightforward. It's that, you know, if I have all these different edge modes, but suppose I somehow randomly mixed between them. So, you know, an excitation is going along and it sort of jumps into edge mode 2 and then to edge mode 247 or whatever, you know. Then if I sort of sample them all roughly independently and randomly, then what could happen but I get a single common velocity out? I mean, what else could it be? Right. Or so you might at least guess that a common velocity could emerge. Okay.
So each of the different modes has a velocity associated with it that's fixed, but the different modes, the pair of modes may have a different velocity.
Yeah, so I mean, in general, there's this complicated potential. So the Hamiltonian is basically this thing. Just V times dx, cx, dx phi, dx phi. So indeed, there's a diagonal term, and there's also off-diagonal terms. So having gradients in one field costs you energy if there's a gradient in another field as well. Okay. You can diagonalize this, and then you sort of have these diagonal modes, and they all have different velocities. So let me change the rules of the game. Everything is the same except now, I'm going to demand that I have, in addition to no on-site symmetry, I also have no translation invariance. Okay. So now the system has no symmetry of any kind. Right? It doesn't even have translation invariance. It only has energy conservation. Okay, so things get ugly very rapidly. So here's the pretty theory I started with. I can add this delta V okay, it breaks the E8. I can add all these perturbations. These are the cartans. These are the raising operators made suitably real. Okay, these one can deal with relatively easily by shifting the definitions of phi related to the GAs. But you know, it's not clear what happens to these and how to deal with these. So it's a very inconvenient formulation. So actually, we were thinking about this a little bit, and we had this sort of clue from old work of Kane and Fisher that at least in context of quantum Hall, people knew how to deal with this kind of problem of disordered chiral edge states. So we can ask, is there a fermionic construction? Maybe that was very useful in the quantum Hall context. So here we can ask the same thing. And there is a fermion construction. It proceeds as follows. So the starting point is an SO16 invariant fermion theory. So here's 16 again. You can think of the bulk of this theory as being like 16 copies of P plus I state of fermions. So there are 16 gamma I. Right? But remember, I wanted to have microscopic bosons. So I don't want these to be gauge invariant fermions. Okay, so let me add a Z2 gauge field, which couples to all the fermions. Okay, so now the fermions are not gauge invariant. There's only microscopically bosons. And let me also say that the fermions all see the same Z2 vortex. So this is not the same as 16 completely independent P plus IPs, each with their own Z2 gauge field. It's really one Z2 gauge field and one vortex, and then 16 fermions that all show the same thing.
So these are the pure E8.
Yeah, so I'm going to construct a pure E8 theory and then show you how to deal with this order. So this is the edge theory in this case. It's just this chiral operator, gamma transpose gamma. And now here again, kappa XY, why is 16 the number that you should think about? Well, these Majorana fermions have thermal Hall coefficients of a half. So if you have 16 of them, you get 8.
So V is a matrix, arbitrary matrix.
Yeah, it's a symmetric matrix.
So where do you think the V comes from?
Sorry?
What do you think the physical origin of the V is?
The physical origin of the V.
I mean, why should the edge be perfectly harmonic?
Oh, no, I mean, this is just a cartoon theory. Later, I'll treat the non-harmonic case. So if you like, this is a theoretical construction.
Yeah, the V is a completely...
Yeah, I'm just... I will definitely show you that if I put an arbitrary V and higher, you know, all kinds of interactions, that nevertheless it flows to this simple theory in the infrared. Okay. So how do you do this? Well, so the important player is actually the vortex. So what the vortex does is when there's no vortex in the bulk, then the fermions are antiperiodic when they go around X on the edge. And when there is a vortex, they become periodic. Okay, so this is a true fact about one copy of P plus IB, and we're just going to use it. It's a particular construction of this E8 state, which uses this fact. And so what we're going to do is vortex condensation, because we want to get rid of the fermions, right? This state that we started with, this SO16 theory, has bulk Z2 topological order, so it's not of the type of state we want to consider. And so what we can do is we want to confine the fermions. We want to get rid of the Z2 topological order, and we can do that by condensing or proliferating the vortices. And so here's the 16 times 1/16. The spin of a single vortex is 1/16. But if they couple to 16 copies of P plus IP, then their spin becomes 16 times 1/16 is 1. They become bosons. And then I can condense them. So this is, this was a comment that Kataya made in his paper and is sort of the starting point of this whole procedure. And so sort of roughly speaking, I don't want to say too much about the details, but so let's say in the context of a toric code, you have, you know, for the Z2 gauge theory, you have these plaquette terms, which are products of Z's along the four sides, and you have the star terms, which are products of X along the four things. The vortex density is like 1 minus this value over 2. So you can imagine basically taking this Z2 gauge theory Hamiltonian, adding like a vortex chemical potential, some vortex interactions, and vortex hopping, and then studying this theory when you use this mu to close the vortex gap. So this is what we have in mind. Somehow we're condensing vortices by making their gap go to 0 and letting them move around.
So you want the gap of 16 to go to 0 without the gap of 1, 2, 3?
Sorry? We want the gap of the vortex to go to 0, but the fermions stay gapped.
So you want the 16 bound state to go to 0?
16? Yeah, yeah.
16?
Yeah, the 16 bound state.
Without the 1, 2, 3,
yes.
16 bound state
yes.
to 0. So that's a very special interaction.
It is definitely very special. So here I'm really talking about the bound state vortex, if you like.
Oh, this is the.
I mean, but this multiple vortices is, there's already a phase transition where these things have all been bound together from the 16 independent copy theory. All
right.
So I think it's not that crazy in terms of this bound state. I mean, how do you bind 16 vortices together is already pretty crazy, but. So the point is just that these vortices are going to be highly fluctuating, so we're going to sum over them. So here's the partition function. And what we're going to do is we're going to compute the partition function of the whole system, including the bulk, but we're going to ignore all the gapped bulk states. So any state which has a gap to it, we're going to ignore. So like you can't create, you know, some massive boson in the bulk, but you can add a single vortex because the vortices are condensed, so that state has no energy. So there are two sectors of the theory. There's an even vortex sector, where the fermions are antisymmetric, and there's an odd vortex sector, which we, as I just said, assumed is gapless. Assume it has the same energy as the even vortex sector, in which the fermions are periodic. And we also project onto even number of fermions, right? Because I said that it's the Z2 gauge theory. Fermions carry Z2 gauge charge, so there has to be an even number of them. Okay. So, okay, you can compute this path integral. It's not hard to do, actually, in terms of the 16 copies of the one-dimensional Majorana fermion path integral. And what you find is the following. Again, with some choice of, some overall choice of periodic energy. I want to emphasize the relative sort of size of this and this is important in physical, but there's an overall constant which I've put to 1. So there's this Q to the minus 1/3. This is, again, like the ground state energy in this antiperiodic sector. And then 1 and plus 120 Q. So anybody know what 120 is? The number of generators of SO16. So this is 120. Now here, this is a vortex sector, the odd vortex sector, and it has, again, some different ground state energy because the fermions are now periodic, right? So they have slightly different ground state energy. And there are 128 zero modes for these Majorana fermions, which have even fermion parity. Okay, so it starts out as 128, and then it goes to add more. And now this relative phase is just right. So if you pull out an overall Q to the minus 1/3, you get 120 plus 128 is 248 Q. Okay. So this is the second piece of numerology. Yeah. Yeah, I think from the edge picture, there's a subtlety. But if I include the bulk, I can do everything in a very concrete way. So there's no subtlety. So here again, so this is the current algebra of this E8 theory, written in terms of the vortex language. There's just gamma I, gamma j, and that's like the SO16 currents. And there's 120 of them, because this is an antisymmetric matrix in terms of I and j. And what about the other 128? There's some kind of vortex fields. Right? And actually, the way you can make them is, this is a bit technical, but you can group these Majorana fermions into complex fermions, re-bosonize them, and then make these new operators, right, like this. And it turns out that as long as these QJs are all plus or minus 1, or sorry, 0 or 1, then this operator has dimension 1. Okay, so it has the same number, has the same dimension to be a current. And you can count how many of these things there are. It turns out there's 128 of them if you fix the fermion number. So this is, in terms of the operators, 120 plus 128. So now, let me talk about the main interest. Okay, so what about disorder? So of course,
where did the Z2 gauge field go?
I just confined it by condensing the vortex.
That doesn't have no effect on the edge at all. Doesn't it mean when a vortex moves to the edge, it has to change the boundary condition all 16 of the Majorana?
Yes.
Where is that
constraint? I'm just saying that in terms of the
but I don't see a constraint on the sign change. It's just about what the operator content is.
It's the operator content, basically. So here I'm just assuming that there's some, you know, there's some global state of the system which has an odd number of vortices. The vortex can sit somewhere or whatever, and it just has a different boundary condition. And then also, as you say, in terms of this operator content. So the fermions are now confined, so I'm not allowed to talk about them as primary fields, but now these vortex operators become truly local, because the fermions are confined. So sort of I'm switching what I mean by local and non-local fields. So let me talk about disorder now. So as was mentioned already, this edge theory, this F0, is very, it's too simple, right? It doesn't make any, it's sort of highly fine-tuned theory. So what we can do is we can do the same game. We can add disorder in the form of random velocities, but still keeping them all positive. We can also add random mass terms. And of course, we can add interactions, also assumed to be random, whatever you want. Okay, so everything is random. Everything in sight is a random 16 by 16 matrix. This breaks the SO16 invariance, but the edge still can't be gapped because it's chiral. Okay, but we can still ask, what's the fate of this theory, right? Does it realize this sort of intuition we had that some things have a common velocity, or what happens? Okay. So here's the Kane-Fisher trick. The trick is to realize that this term here looks a lot like a static SO16 gauge potential. Okay. In other words, it looks like it's just, you know, there's this derivative term right here. It looks like it's just like derivative plus something, right? That's like D plus A. So a natural suggestion is to try to get rid of this M by gauging, by doing some gauge transformation, right? So I take my fermions and I define new fermions, gamma tilde, which are related to the old ones via some orthogonal transformation. And if you run through this equation, what you find is that this orthogonal transformation satisfies some equation. That is that O dx O transpose anti-commutator with this velocity matrix should be equal to 2m. Okay. And if you make this choice, you can always find an O that which satisfies this equation. If you make this choice, then the m term drops out. And what you're left with is this kind of structure. You have O transpose delta V O times this gamma tilde operators. Right? And then, again, higher order terms. But the key point is now that this thing in the bracket here has zero average under disorder. Okay, so it's sort of randomly doing things, but has no net effect. And so the natural thing to do is to look at its disorder average square. Yeah?
They're all positive, right?
Yeah, they're all positive. So this is the traceless part of the velocity, actually. So I subtract out the sort of uniform velocity. But yeah, in principle, all the velocities have to be positive. So I don't want to have completely general velocity disorder. But you see this O, just O comes from the mass, and that can be completely general. As long as the velocities are all positive, I can do whatever I want with the mass, and I can't gap things out. So I have terms like this and higher order terms, but they're random. They have zero average. So the natural thing to do is to look at the disorder average square. Okay, so I want to look at operators like this with some disorder field here, which has zero disorder average, so overline is disorder average, times some operator. So this is the disorder RG. Start with this term in the action, and I want to look at the disorder average of it. So I'm sort of, if you like, computing the free energy perturbatively in this interaction, right? So I want to compute the disorder average free energy perturbatively. And I can do that calculation by just computing the disorder average of this square. And you see the important thing is just that it's correlated in space. It's short range correlated in space, but infinitely long range correlated in time. So I only get a delta function in space. And this W is just like the strength. It's the, you know, D squared correlation function. So I end up with this kind of theory. I have this coupling constant W, which is the strength of disorder. I have dx, dt, dt prime, and the operators squared, right? X and t prime. So same space, different times. And now, okay, you can just do the RG on this theory, do the RG determined by S naught. And so the change in W as I change the RG scale is 3, because there are one space and two times, plus minus the dimension of this operator minus the dimension of that operator. So it's 3 minus 2 delta of the operator times W. That's the RG equation. And now, okay, let's apply this equation. What's the dimension of this operator? Gamma tilde transpose I dx gamma tilde. Gamma tilde has dimension 1/2. So gamma tilde squared has dimension of 1. And add another derivative, has dimension of 2. So therefore, delta is 2. 3 minus 2 times 2 is minus 1, which is less than 0. So this term flows to 0 under the RG. So therefore, this velocity perturbation is irrelevant. We already removed the mass term. Yeah.
The left hand side of the RG equation is increasing cutoff, so you probably want
to. I just made some choice about, yeah. I wrote this too quickly when I was up late last night. So. Okay, put a minus sign there.
Okay, thank you.
Sorry, Subir.
You've been going back and forth between ADS and CFT.
Yeah, right. I was trying to make that right-hand side negative, positive, and I was wondering.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. No. So actually, lambda is a link.
Oh, okay.
You're just confused with the notation. So this velocity perturbation is irrelevant, right? And interactions are also irrelevant. They have like gamma, 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 gamma has dimension 2, so it's also going to die, right? There's no SO16 invariant combination I can make, so it's going to have these O's appearing there. And so thus we reach this conclusion that the SO16 disorder fixed point is stable. Okay, so all these interactions, all this other stuff, but in the end it flows to this pure theory just determined by this nice pure thing. Okay, then almost as a side note, you can now condense vortices in this state. There's one subtlety. If you want to do it on finite size system, you should, let's say, we want to require this O to be periodic, so we don't change boundary conditions. And that just requires you to make some subtle shift in what your definition of M is. So you end up with what's left over is a residual small gauge field. But you can show that if you still do the sum over boundary conditions that I showed you before, that you can prove that in a limit as all goes infinity, the ratio of these two things is equal to 1. So it really is still approaching the EA theory. And of course, you can make all the operators, right? We have these fermion currents, gamma I, gamma j. You can bosonize, you can make the EA currents because the fermions are still confined. So we have all the operators in this theory. It really is the EA theory. Modulo this small detail of this SO16, this small residual SO16 gauge potential. So okay, that's the route we first took, but actually we realized in the last 5 days that there's a much simpler. So I should have probably just not told you all of that. I told you this. But I didn't want to waste all my hard work. So this is conceptually simpler, but technically more involved. So you might think, well, why should I do this fermion representation? Why not just start with some theory that has the E8 symmetry, perturb that theory, and then study the perturbations? So that theory is the disordered E8 Weslomino-Novikov-Witten model, okay, which is chiral. So sort of you see this dt dx structure you had before? And now there's also this so-called Weslomino-Witten term, and there are other terms that set the velocities. There's all kinds of other stuff, which I'm not going to tell you about. But amongst all these other things are terms like this, dx dt trace of this particular combination of g's. So g is valued in E8 Lie group, and this matrix M, which is like some kind of random perturbation. So can we deal with this theory directly? And that would be sort of the nicest thing. And I want to argue, actually, you can. You can just use the trick we just did. So you have these currents. These are the E8 currents, J inverse DXG. They're sort of in the Lie algebra. And they obey a current algebra. So again, you don't need to know the details, just there's some commutation relation in which they obey. And this is the Hamiltonian. It's the trace of these two currents, plus, let's say, this random term, plus all kinds of other terms. So this is the standard construction of the Hamiltonian Sugawara construction in CFT. So the simple thing to do based on the fermion picture is to just try to redefine the currents while preserving the algebra, right? So take the J's and make them into J tildes. You can shift and you can rotate, right, as a function of space. And as long as you can choose R and Q, so there's a relation between R and Q so that both J and J tildes satisfy this algebra. And then we can choose Q to remove the disorder term. You can see I'm just going to get a kind of, you know, J tilde squared plus J tilde Q plus Q squared kind of combination here. So I choose the Q term to kill this M. And I told you that J tilde is assumed to have the same current algebra. So I can treat it like the same kind of field as I treated before. And so then the same story just goes through. The remaining terms have zero average. Their squares turn out to be irrelevant. And so indeed, this is just a, you know, once you grant me all the power of the E8 Weslomino-Witten theory, then I can give a two-line proof that this disorder fixed point is stable. Okay. And it really.
Where does the E8 come in here? I mean, why?
Actually, one byproduct of this work is we realize actually there's a very simple argument basically for any group that it's symmetric. So this disorder fixed point is symmetric. As long as it's, let's say, simple or something like that. So these averages when you average over the group, it kind of gives you something, just the identity or something trivial. So yeah, so as a technical byproduct is you realize this argument works for a huge set of theories. Okay, so what have I shown you? I told you about three ways to construct this E8 state, one in terms of bosons, one in terms of fermions condensing, and one in terms of this so-called nonlinear signal model. Okay, and then I gave you two arguments, very briefly, that with disorder, the low-energy theory has enhanced symmetry. So without disorder, and just in the generic translation variant case, there was no E8 symmetry, no conformal symmetry. With disorder, these symmetries emerged. And so this is an example of asymmetry-protected emergence, E8 or many other kinds of symmetry. So only by considering the most generic, no translation variant, no other symmetries, do we get this emergent low-energy symmetry. And of course, you could always fine-tune things. You could always put in E8 symmetry by hand. That's somehow not very surprising. But what's surprising is that if you took a lab system, which realized the state, and you did just hit it with a hammer, it would actually become more symmetric. That's the conclusion. So just some more general thoughts. One thing you can say is that there's this bulk edge correspondence which relates edge states to spectrum of reduced intermatrices in the bulk, so-called entanglement spectrum. And actually, this correspondence would probably imply that the entanglement spectrum has the same symmetry. So it would be much more symmetric than you might have thought. You can ask other interesting questions that were prompted by this thinking. Suppose I had a gapless system which has an emergent low-energy symmetry. Could that low-energy symmetry protect different states? So could that classify things just by their emergent symmetry, not in terms of their actual symmetry? And of course, there's a definite prediction that should this system be seen, then by making it more disordered, you're going to only make it more symmetric, right? Which would be kind of amazing to see 248. You're tunneling something into the edge of some system and you see 248 operators all with the same velocity and dimensions. That would be pretty amazing. Okay, so that let me just say thank you.
I'm kind of new to this. I'm having trouble visualizing what absolutely no symmetry looks like.
Yeah, so
just come into my wife's next time you come to Santa Barbara.
Just think about a spin model, right? Like think about the Kitaev model. Add fields in every direction, Just do whatever you want.
Symmetry is prohibited, is in
of course you can have symmetry. That may just in this case it actually hurts me. But usually symmetry helps. So you can definitely have symmetry. In fact, you may have symmetry physically.
Okay, because I'm just imagining if you have some, you say there's no translational symmetry.
Yeah.
At some scale, you're going to end up with it, right?
I mean, the velocity is not translation.
You can ask me better. But you can always have symmetry. I'm just asking a sort of in principle question. Suppose you had no symmetry. What can still happen. And in fact, with no symmetry, interesting things do happen.
So just to confirm my understanding, so if I have the 16 fermions, without introducing this Wernicke condensation, just with disorder, will you automatically get this black condensation, take you from SO 16?
No, that doesn't happen. There's a question about if you disorder the bulk. Let's say you just put disorder at the edge, then you would just flow to this uniform state, but you wouldn't vortex condense.
But I think you just need to add a local interaction theorem that will do.
Yeah, it's possible. I mean, it depends on the details. Like the bulk may still be some topological. But you can add vortices at the edge.
I mean, the edge is not described by a linear, Hermitian harmonic theory.
Yeah.
Can I ask?
Yeah.
Are there situations where I would have to worry that the disorder is so strong that it might actually change the scaling dimensions of these fields?
Yeah, what I did was just a small disorder RG, so I just showed that that's stable.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, I think I don't have a general argument that every disordered system will flow to this. I mean, you can always, make anti-propagating edge states or something like that can change things around. So I don't think I can make a general argument. Yeah.
Do you know lattice models sort of directly give the E8 on the one from side of the screen?
I don't know. Do adjoint fermions with C equals one band do it? Suppose you pick fermions on the adjoint of E8 and put them in a C equals one band. Would that? I'm not sure actually, but that might work. Yeah. I'm not sure. Yeah, there is a bulk theory which would do it pretty well, but it really goes from the fermion plus vortex route.
No more questions?